Good evening, my friends. This is Carolyn Evers, and I've brought along one of my favorite friends.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
I'm so glad you... and I'm so glad you're joining us, Richard. Couldn't
That's
do this
kind
without
of you, Carolyn. Well, it would be a struggle to do this without either of us, I think.
Yes, we're a good team, aren't we?
Indeed.
So what I wanted to mention to people, if they are not on our email list to know who we're having on the radio show and other things, tell people how they can join our list.
Yes, you just go to our major website, the 2012countdown.com, and you enter your name and your email address on any of those pages on that website, and then acknowledge the email that will be sent to you, and it's all done and dusted.
Thank you, Richard. And for those who are not aware of who our guest is tonight, would you tell them?
I can do that, Carolyn. We have Henry Ford, the first Henry Ford, not the second, the one who founded the Ford Motor Company.
Yes, I think it's going to be an exciting show, because he has a lot to talk about, and we have a lot to ask him. So, Richard, are you connected with Mr. Ford?
I believe so. You'd like me to describe his energy?
I certainly would. And for those who are listening, you might be able to pick up on this if you put your energy in your heart center and intend to listen to Mr. Ford.
I find his energy very interesting. It's not what I would call a heart-based energy, the way most of the people that we bring forth is. It's more mind-based, you might say. And I actually experience his energy almost in my head, which is most unusual. And it's not that he lacks heart energy, but it's certainly not what drove the man in his life, I would suggest. And these things do get expressed in the energy of the soul as it continues to journey. It's very much part of the soul as it comes forth and is expressed in the life of the individual, and then it remains with the soul. And hence you have this association that you can pick up after the individual has crossed over. I suspect he was a very intelligent man, very honest is my sense, a man of great integrity, very forthright, very committed, I would suggest, to the things that he focused upon. There is this directness, very powerful, direct, intelligent, honest kind of sense of energy. It's very interesting. I've not experienced anyone quite like this in these sessions that we've done.
I think that's interesting that you can pick up these attributes from his energy. I think that's amazing.
I do too. I must say, it's not something I expected when I started doing these things, but it's very clear. It's very interesting.
Yes, it sounds interesting. And I'm assuming that he has a message for our listeners.
I hope so, or it's going to be a slow show.
Indeed.
Let's see what he has to say. My dear friends, it is an honor and a privilege to come forth in this manner. It is not something that I had in any manner anticipated or planned upon, obviously, in my life, because I had no real awareness of these kinds of abilities or practices as I lived my life. And also, it's not something that I had expected in, you might say, this dimension. I was aware that Richard had become interested in my writings, and we will get to that in a while, but it was as I say, something of a surprise to be asked to come forth in this manner, though I do welcome it because it is a unique opportunity to share my perspective on my own life and also to share some perspective on the world as I saw it then and as I see it in your time, and perhaps provide some further input to the broader picture of the time in which you find yourselves. But let me, you might say, wind the clock back to when I lived. As you may know, I was born, perhaps you might consider, in the second half of the 19th century, and I was born on a farm in Michigan, and so my father was a farmer, though my interest was more in the machinery that was used on the farm and the machinery that was available in the community at the time. I was simply drawn to things mechanical, you might say. I had an interest in watches, pulling them apart and seeing how they worked. I had an interest in steam engines, which were the really the only form of engine as it existed in my youth. And so I studied these things. I was just drawn to them. And really, the early years of my life were about tinkering and learning. I had this extraordinary thirst for knowledge, not really being sure initially why I was drawn in this manner. But as I reflect on my life from this perspective, you might consider, where I now find myself, and I have to say I still pursue intellectual subjects, subjects of great study, I recognize that I had chosen a path that would lead me down the path I walked in so many ways. Most people are unaware that they choose most of the major aspects of their lives, including their parents and their partners and so on, before they ever come. And I certainly had no understanding of any of this in my life, but I do understand it from the perspective from which I now view those events and my own existence today. But I do not wish to get ahead of myself, simply to see and to recognize that I had chosen the life path that I executed, this life path which saw me be very influential, you might say, in the unfolding of the automotive industry in my time. Many credit me with the creation of the automobile, which is inaccurate, though I certainly was involved with it from the very beginnings. And also many credit me with the creation of the assembly line. And if you focus on the automotive industry, then that is true. However, I borrowed the idea from the meat processing industry. They were already using such practices in their industry before I borrowed it, you might say, and applied it to the automotive industry. So I was a great student of other industries and other approaches to things. I am also a champion of the notion that it is not a failure to fail, you might consider, because my first two attempts at starting a company both failed, but I did not let that stop me because I was driven, you might say, to achieve the, you might consider, successes that I was able to express in my life by way of making the automobile, the early car, available to pretty much anyone who wished to buy it. The Model T in particular was very inexpensive and was very widely sought after. It is true that I did not recognize that there was a growing demand for a more upmarket vehicle, you might consider. And so I really lost the momentum, at least my company lost the momentum as a result of my intransigence, you might say. And so the industry grew and broadened from the base which in large measure I had created. And I acknowledge a phenomenon that I know those who've run businesses understand called the founder's trap. I fell right into that trap. And that trap is that the founder of a business very often does not understand how to pass on that business to those who follow them, whether they be their children or whether they be other individuals who come forward to take over that business or move it forward on behalf of its family owners. And I very strongly fell into that trap. My son Edsel had a great deal to contribute. He had ideas that were different from mine that, had I listened to, Ford would have been much more successful during my later years, when his counsel would have made the business more better positioned, might be a way to express it, by way of the competing automobile companies that emerged. And so, nevertheless, I am in overall terms pleased with the success of the company, which, as you know, remains one of the key automotive manufacturers in the world, not just of cars, but of many other sorts of vehicles. And some of you may know that I developed an interest in politics, not so much because I wanted to be a politician, but rather I wanted to try and help to steer the country in what I saw as being a more healthy direction. I failed in my bid for political office, but that did not mean that I did not have a great deal of interest in how the country was unfolding. And indeed, it was this interest that caused me to study and understand how the finances of the world worked, how what you might call today the Zionists, I called them rather more the international Jews, really had taken control of the world's finances back in the 19th century and were even working on it prior to this. But essentially, they wrenched control of global finances in the 19th century. And so by the time that I was active, which really was in the late 19th century through till the period spanning the two world wars and the Depression, that by the time all of that unfolded, I was very clear about how the world worked in a financial sense and in many other senses. And indeed, it was this understanding that I garnered that caused me to purchase the Dearborn Independent and be responsible for a series of articles that were written in that paper from the beginning of 1920 to the very early days of 1922. And what I sought to do was to expose the control that these individuals had exercised over America, because it was very clear to me that their grip was ironclad by the beginning of the 20th century. And really, the unfolding of the Federal Reserve in 1913 was simply the crowning glory, you might consider, for control that they already had. And indeed, I exposed many other ways in which the Jewish finances, you might consider, had been used to control so many things within the American experience. For example, I wrote about how they had taken over the theater in New York, not only New York, but across the country, how they really were responsible for the abuse of whiskey in particular, but alcohol in general, and destroying what had been the great Kentucky whiskeys, which led to the unfolding of prohibition. It was because of the abuse of the alcohol and hence people becoming very ill with the low-grade product that they were creating, which had nothing to do really with the origins of Great Kentucky whiskey. But they took over the alcohol industry in essence and debased it completely. They had no real interest in their customers but simply making money, and hence destroyed the whiskey industry as it existed in that time, because the great whiskey makers were artisans, just as great winemakers are artisans. And they destroyed this. Similarly, they essentially created the movie industry from its very foundations. And I could go on. I wrote about how the, you might consider, Rothschild interests, or those who represented their interests in America, basically bought Woodrow Wilson's election. And so I was able to witness how these financial interests that represented the Rothschilds had bought the election of Woodrow Wilson and had prior to that planned the creation of the Federal Reserve. And so I could witness all of this, and I also wrote about how a man called Bernard Baruch basically controlled the entire supply process for America, both domestically and for war purposes, and also for the Allies during World War I. Now, Bernard Baruch was a very well-known Jewish Wall Street banker who had undertaken the amalgamation of some of the early trusts, the Rubber Trust and the Copper Trust, which essentially were Jewish control of those industries. And so you might consider he was well placed. And so Woodrow Wilson was a bought man from the outset and a very ineffectual president in my view. His history has been somewhat polished up in retrospect, but the man was completely compromised and disrespected by many because of the way in which he was simply controlled by those moneyed interests. So I sought to expose all of this in those years, and my writings I subsequently had published as, at that time, two volumes called The International Jew, and they are still available today, and I stand by everything that I wrote in that time. And in a way, it is part of the connection from my time that flows down into yours, because those very same interests still control your world today, even more powerfully than they did in my time. It is clear to me that they had very long-term plans that they have continued to roll out. It is clear to me that they already had plans back at the very beginnings of the 20th century to reduce the human population, to control humanity for their own interests. And indeed, if you examine the great, you might consider, robber barons, as they were called in the early part of the 20th century, those individuals were all funded by Rothschild interests, and so they were representing those interests in various ways and have continued to do so through the foundations, as they were called, that were subsequently set up. Firstly, the notion of the foundations was legalized so that those great, you might consider, wealth reservoirs were protected from tax, and then were directed to pursue the essentially Zionist-driven interests. And this continues today. And unless people begin to examine how the world works, they will miss how deeply and thoroughly and comprehensively these individuals control your world. They create the trends in the music that you listen to. Most people are unaware that the Rockefeller Foundation had the tuning frequency of music shifted in the 1920s and 30s to be less heart-centered and more disruptive to the human psyche. There are so many ways in which the, you might consider, energy field in which you live has been distorted and twisted. And so it is important that you begin to become aware of these things. These efforts to, you might consider, destroy the food that that humanity in large measure consumes through genetically modified foods. All of this is part of the same plan, the use of vaccines and pharmaceuticals to, in fact, destroy the human being is all part of the plan, my friends. And until and unless you understand this, you do not understand how your world works. Now, I could see these things unfolding in my time, which is why I wrote the articles that I did. And I pursued this for some time until the bankers were in a position to threaten me to either keep quiet or they would bankrupt my business. And there were so many people who were dependent upon their employment with me that I was unwilling to put that business at risk. And so I accepted their terms and went quiet. But that does not mean that I did not understand what was happening, because all that I wrote was true. Those of you that have read what I wrote at the time will understand that I, in large measure, quoted Jewish sources for my information. I did not rely on the opinions of others. And in this manner, I made what I wrote something that they could not destroy, because it was their own words. And whilst they railed against what I was writing for some time, in the end they went quiet and tried to ignore it, until they were in a position to threaten me, as I say, and I accepted their terms to protect my business and those who relied upon my business for their employment. So I paint this picture because it is important that you understand that their control is almost complete. Now, I mention this because I, since I've been on this side, have come to understand that all of this is part of a broader dark plan to, in essence, seek to completely control humanity, but that they will fail in their attempt because of the time in which you find yourselves is the time when those of humanity that choose it will, you might consider, slip out of their grasp into a new consciousness and move away, leaving them with their own, you might consider, to contemplate and to acknowledge their failure. So it is important that you recognize in the time in which you find yourselves that this difficult and challenging time, you might say, in fact, will be a time of great freedom, a time when those of you who choose to do so will step out of this difficult experience and move beyond it. You might consider participate in what others have called the ascension process. And I wish to confirm that this is indeed part of the plan. And indeed, in my own way, I recognize that part of my mission in my life was to alert people to these forces at work in the background. And so, my friends, this is my message to you tonight, that the world has been deeply manipulated. It was very clear in the time in which I lived. It has become even more comprehensive in your time, but you live in the time when you will slip out of their grasp.
Thank you so much. And Richard, thank you for bringing this message forth. It was a very exciting message, and it brings up so many things to discuss, and I would like to invite those who are listening to this show today to call in with their questions so that Mr. Ford can answer them. And I have a question, and my question is this. You talked about failure. Tell me, in your opinion, when someone fails, how that might spur them on or how that might help an individual to come back and find success?
It depends a great deal on the individual, of course. Some people treat failure in a financial sense as being a failure in life. I never looked at it like that. I simply saw it as a stepping stone, a learning process, you might consider, because I did not have a background as a businessman. I did not understand all the issues of running a business. And so my first attempts were something of a learning curve. And I recognized that there were those who were providing the funds for me to start my business, for whom the amount of money that they lost was really quite small. So whilst my failures led to some distrust of, by some of those individuals, understandably, it, from my perspective, was simply a stepping stone to success. And so I looked at how I might, you might consider, take those failures and convert them into success, which is what I did. So people react to failure in that manner, and indeed in other manners, on really two essentially different levels. The first is that they take that failure personally. They take that as a failure in and of themselves, and so they are defeated by that failure. Whereas someone who has a broader vision of themselves and what they are doing in life simply sees a failure as being a stepping stone to success, a stepping stone in terms of learning, but also in terms of resilience and perspective. And that is how I viewed it. And those who have been, I would suggest, in large measure, wildly successful in the world, have usually gone through failure in a business sense once or twice before they achieve success. So really, those two essentially different approaches to failure explain how people operate in the world. Of course, there are many who are not willing to take any kind of risk in a business sense, and so they remain as employees of others. Simply, you might consider filling out the numbers that make the world work. So the question of failure for them is very much in that first category, where a failure they take very personally. And it is not the path that I would recommend for anyone, as you might understand.
Thank you. Appreciate the answer. I have a question, and I don't know that you have an answer for this, but I did want your opinion. You talked about vaccines, and there are many who believe that they should not have their children vaccinated because of the contaminants that are contained within the vaccines. But in today's world, in many places, people, mothers are coerced because a child will not allow to be allowed to go to school without being vaccinated. Do you have any thoughts about this?
It is my view that vaccination is one of the mechanisms being used to, you might consider, dumb down the population in general. Firstly, if one examines the records of disease in the world, it is apparent that most of the rapid fall off in infection from most of the illnesses for which vaccines are used, in fact, occurred before the vaccines were introduced. But this is not information that is made public. There are those who've sought this information out and written it up, but of course, the mainstream media does not reveal it because they are under the control of the same interests that bring forth the vaccines. Indeed, it is why I bought the Dearborn Independent to bring forth my articles, because I knew I could never get them published any other way. So, vaccines are not only an issue from the point of view of the contaminants, but indeed the notion, the very notion of so-called herd immunity has no basis in scientific fact. So the whole vaccine regime is a deception at its very beginning. So it is difficult. In the United States, there are a number of states where you can be a conscientious objector with regard to vaccination, either on religious or other grounds. And I encourage you to check this out if you are a parent with young children or a grandparent whose children have young children and who are concerned about this, because there are ways around this in a number of the states. It is becoming more difficult, and there has been a federal effort, you might consider, to make vaccination compulsory across the entire country. And I believe that will be resisted, because there have been many people who have registered their dissatisfaction with this effort. So I would encourage the parents to look more closely at the situation. Firstly, I discourage you from having your children vaccinated very strongly, but also I encourage you to look more closely at whether you live in a state where you can avoid being bound to have your children vaccinated to go to school. There are states where they say that you are bound to, when in fact you are not, if you understand your true rights.
Thank you. I invite our listeners to send in their questions if they wish. I would like to ask another question, since we don't have a caller right now. So much in the world, when you accomplish, is based upon cooperation. Can you give us a few thoughts as to how you got people to cooperate with one another?
It is an interesting question, because in ways I was very good at, you might consider, motivating others, and in other ways I was very pig-headed, you might consider. Particularly in my early days, I was able to draw to me very capable, intelligent, motivated people, and I was good at motivating them to achieve great things. And really, my success was very much driven by that ability. And in ways that continued through most of my time. And so it's very important, if you want to be successful in the way that I was, in a new industry, for example, or in a new endeavor, to be able to draw good people to work with you, to give them the freedom to act, to support them, to encourage them, to enroll them in your vision for what it is you wish to create, and then give them freedom to act. This is really very important. If you don't do that, then the good people will leave you, and you will have trouble attracting other new good people to replace them. It is a balancing act that all what I would consider entrepreneurs who build substantial businesses are faced with, and some do this better than others.
So this is
a critical element of this. I would also recognize that when it came to the overall direction of my business, I, as I said, was somewhat pig-headed. I did not listen as much to my son, and indeed to others, as I could have and should have done. I felt I knew better, and the evidence is that I did not. So I do not hold myself up as some great virtuous individual who had everything sorted, because I truly did not. But it's important to be open to input in all areas where you draw good people to you, both people that are going to work for you and people that are going to contribute at the higher level. You need to surround yourself with good people in all areas. And really, the fact that I could draw good people together and motivate them meant that I was able to achieve so much. History records that I was responsible for introducing the what's known as lightweight V8 engine relatively late in my business career. And again, this was a mixture of enrolling others in my vision and also allowing good people to experiment with ideas. And several times the engineers came back to me and said it couldn't be done. And I said, it can be, keep looking. And to their credit, they kept looking and they did solve the problems. So it is an interesting mixture. And if I had to point out my weakness, as I say, it was that I did not listen to others sufficiently in relation to the evolving directions of my business.
Thank you. We have Ruth on line one. Ruth, your question, please.
I would actually like to find out how Mr. Ford sees the meteoric rise of the medical use of marijuana.
Did you hear the question, Richard?
Yes. As you may know, marijuana was considered a drug in my time, because it had already been suppressed, and I did not understand what I now understand from this perspective. And that is that if you wind the clock back before the emergence of the pharmaceutical industry under the guidance of John D. Rockefeller, then you will see that marijuana, or more particularly the compounds contained in marijuana, played a very important role in healing. So many medicines of various sorts contained cannabis oil and so on. And so its role in healing was very well established and very old. And people have wondered why marijuana as a plant was stamped out. Firstly, you had the power of the plant itself. The fiber as hemp is a wonderful product for creating so many products. And of course, the power of the cannabis oil and so on for healing purposes, including cancer. And so it's important to really view the emergence of medical marijuana today in the context of its suppression, which was in many ways relatively recent, beginning in the early 20th century and lasting for perhaps 100 years. But if you wind it back further, it was well established, well accepted, and widely used for medicinal purposes. So its emergence today is, in a sense, something of a recovery, and it is being allowed in part because there is this recognition that it has a powerful role in healing, but also because the medical establishment, the pharmaceutical establishment, believes they now have sufficient control of the game, you might consider, to be able to allow a little latitude on the side.
Thank you for your question, Ruth, and your answer. That is greatly appreciated. Lou is on line two. Lou, your question, please.
Hi, I had a question about the experience that Mr. Ford has on the other side of the veil, I guess. And is it that he has access to all beings in the universe, their consciousness, other forms of life, ETs of other natures, or is he kind of just oriented towards Earth? But does he travel? What is that experience like? Is it like Star Wars where they walk into the bar and there's like, you know, 15, 20 different ETs all socializing? Or what is the experience like?
It is an interesting question that you ask. Firstly, as you would recognize, I am not incarnate in this state. And so the experience is rather more of what you might consider the spiritual world. And yes, I can communicate with any expression of consciousness that I might choose. Indeed, you can also, if you practice the skills, though it is much easier on this side and much more obvious, you might consider that this ability exists. Secondly, the experience of linear time that you have, where you are, you might consider dissolves as you cross over into this experience. So the past is far more readily accessible. And the future you might consider as something that you can try on and choose based on scenarios that you explore. So the experience of existence is very different. Now, for me, I, as I said, choose to continue to learn and study and understand. And I have accelerated that enormously since I've been on this side. I want to understand how life works in every conceivable manner, how beings incarnate, how beings exist and choose not to incarnate, and the various paths that individuals might choose, the power to create galaxies and so on, how this all works. It is a fascinating area and it is my primary focus. I do not have contact to any great degree with other incarnate beings, though they certainly exist and I'm aware of them. Perhaps the Star Wars display is not overly accurate, but nevertheless, there are many different forms of beings. This I am aware of, but as I say, I do not have that interaction to any great degree, but rather follow a path which you might consider was fashioned to an extent by my life on Earth. In a way, it fashions the path of the soul in important ways. It sets directions and preferences and foci, you might consider, and many souls, after they cross over, continue to evolve in ways which are in many ways patterned by the way they lived on Earth. It is an interesting phenomenon to observe.
Thank you. Thank you for your question, Lou, and your answer. Can you give us some idea or an opinion of where the American automobile industry is going to be going or moving?
It is an interesting question that you ask, because I recognize that really the technology exists for a complete transformation of, firstly, how people might move from one place to another, but also how they might transport things from one place to another. Really, the automobile as it exists is quite antiquated in those terms. There are those who develop technologies which enable one to, you might say, have a personal vehicle which can travel beyond the speed of light to anywhere that you might choose. And such technology could be deployed on the Earth to move around. You would not need roads. You do not need fossil fuels. You do not even need a battery that needs to be charged. So all of that technology exists today. Of course, there are other trends within the existing automotive format, the emergence of the electric vehicle and rechargeable vehicles using solar energy, for example, to recharge those vehicles. And this is perhaps best illustrated by the Tesla vehicle, which is being developed in California and is a shining example of what American engineering and intellect can create. It is very exciting to see that development. But in a way, it is also sad that these far more advanced technologies are suppressed because those who control the planet do not wish them to be expressed and brought forth. And they will continue to exercise that control because they want humanity stuck in this limited experience, this limited mentality, this enslavement on so many levels that they are enslaved, including the use of fossil fuels. The automotive industry as it exists in America will continue to plod along. It lost its way really in the 40s and 50s, where it fell in many ways into the trap that I had fallen into in believing its own self-importance, you might say, and lost the ability to innovate and was overtaken by the Japanese and by the Europeans from a different angle. Of course, the local industry has responded in some ways to those pressures and has learnt some of the lessons, and so it has survived, but it has really stopped being the innovator that it was in the time that I was part of the industry, with the exception of what I mentioned with Tesla.
Thank you for your question, Lou, and the answer. We appreciate it very much, and we appreciate so much your willingness to come and give us such forthright answers. And we thank you for all that you have contributed tonight. And Richard, we'd like to thank you for bringing forth all of this information with Mr. Ford.
My pleasure, Carolyn. Thank you.
I'd like to move on to some other areas. We don't have a lot of time, but I did want to discuss perhaps some new things that we're working on that maybe you have an opinion to discuss.
Yes, Carolyn. Yes, I'd be happy to do that. And the project that comes to mind is in a way new, in a way old, and that is the Akashic readings that you've begun to do once more. I know some people who'll be listening to this show have been connected to Carolyn's work for many years. Many of you would know that Carolyn began doing BBS radio shows nearly 20 years ago now, long before she and I were working together. And in those earlier years, she began to bring forth readings from the Akashic Records. And they were, in fact, quite popular, and some of the material that she brought forth was really quite amazing and very insightful and very valuable, I think, to the people that received those readings. Indeed, it was her experience that quite a number of people would return for multiple readings based on the information that they received in response to their questions. And so Carolyn's health has now improved to a place where she is comfortable doing these readings once more, and we're doing them a little differently now. You send in your questions, and I will record the answers as she brings them forth and then make that available to you as a recording and also as a transcribed text. A version of those answers. In the past, you just got the text version, and she would kind of type them as they came forth, you might say. Now the technology's moved on a bit.
Like all technology, huh?
And I'm very excited that Carolyn's begun to do these again. And if you have questions about your journey or your history or some things you want to understand, then an Akashic reading is, I think, a very exciting way to go about this, because Carolyn works with the cherubim that look after the Akashic records in the center of the cosmos. You may or may not be aware that the journeys of all souls, in fact, all of the activity within creation, is stored in what are known as the Akashic records in the center of the cosmos. They're kind of like an electronic spot or a magnetic spot, you might consider, in the center of the cosmos. And these records are written and maintained and protected by a group, some of the cherubim angels. That's their role, to look after these records. And so Carolyn simply connects with those cherubim that are in the center of the cosmos, and they give her the answer to the question based on the information in your record. So it's quite fascinating. And often she's able to witness the rays in which the colors of the rays in which your soul was created, the color of your record book as it's shown to Carolyn by the cherubim, which is a reflection of, you might say, the overall soul mission that you might have, the mission of your monad in overall terms. And all of this information is available to her. It's quite unique. So I encourage you to consider our refashioned version of those extraordinary Akashic Records readings.
Thank you, Richard. And I'm assuming that when you send this out, you're going to put a link to that, so people might be able to order them?
Yes, actually what I'll do probably tomorrow is send out another email to everyone on our list in relation to those readings. So, yes, I'll be covering that shortly.
Richard, we have two more minutes with regards to this show. Is there anything that you would like to bring forth? Maybe a comment on something that Mr. Ford had said, or a comment from your own information?
Commenting on what Henry Ford had to say, I must say I found it very interesting to connect with the man, to get a feel for where he was coming from and why. And also, as I said at the beginning, feeling his energy, a very really very intellectual kind of energy. I found it quite fascinating that he was so much in that direction. And I guess it really supported the things that he, in essence, was doing in his life. Very driven, very capable, very entrepreneurial man who was also a thinking man in terms of how the world was working and what he could see. And the evidence has reinforced what he was saying about how the world was being controlled back then. There are many others that have written about it since that are entirely consistent with that picture. So I must say I found it really very, very interesting to bring his information forth and to feel the energy of the man.
Thank you, Richard. We're basically out of time. We might have 1 minute. Perhaps you might want to mention our recording of the Templars.
By
Can you do that in a minute?
Well, it's hard to really, because there's so much material in those recordings. Quite fascinating material, really. But essentially, two Templars primarily came forth to connect with Carolyn and I. In 2010 and 2011, I think it was, and gave us a whole series of messages about what they were doing and why they were doing it back in their time, and in part talked about how they had built the Gothic cathedrals, part of which was about providing an initiation path, an ascension path, in fact, which began in Spain and ended in Roslyn Chapel in Scotland. It was just an amazing story, amazing information that they shared with us. And if you're drawn to that kind of material and you haven't connected with those recordings, I encourage you to do so. Check out the material that's on that website. And if you're drawn to do so, order your own copy of them.
Thank you, Richard. And we're at the end of our radio show today. And I'd like to thank you and Mr. Ford, and I look forward to what will be coming in the future. And thank you so much, Richard, for all of your help and cooperation and all that you do.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you for your efforts in making all of this work. Until next time, my friends, good night for now.
Good night for now.